Good morning. You are listening to 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut. This is Bicycle Talk. Thank you very much for listening. Bicycle Talk is a show about bicycles, of course, with my co-host Fran Storr. It's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487 or text us at the same number, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also, if you are listening to this on a podcast, you can also email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and I will answer your concerns and hopefully broadcast them on the radio, and we can talk more about all things bicycle, because bicycles are good. We like bicycles. That's why we're here. I'm going to start it again with my Ron's rant of the day. And this one is, well, first of all, good morning, Fran. Just to say hi to Fran. I know you're there.
Good morning.
There she is. Ron's rant of the day. I'm going to talk about rail trail and bicycle lane behavior on my rant this morning. So what does that mean? It means that we have, especially here in northeastern Connecticut, and actually a lot of parts of Connecticut, we now have a lot more trails that are available for us to ride our bicycles on, and they keep us off of the roads, and they keep us in a place that is deemed safe for cycling. And some of our trails are dirt trails, and some of our trails, and it's a hard-packed dirt trail. It's a very, very nice dirt road, and one that I have no trouble, and I know another number of other people have no trouble riding even their very fancy road bikes on, because it's in that good of a condition. And then we have a lot of bike lanes, and the bike lanes that we have are normally they are paved, and they will be separated from traffic. We have a really nice one that actually we have a talk coming up on that really soon, and I don't have the information in front of me right now. If someone has that information and would like to call and contribute to it, we would love to hear from you. But I know that there's a meeting coming up in Bolton here very shortly, and I'm not 100% sure on the date or time because I don't have it in front of me right now. And it is going to be talking about the connection of the Hop River Trail to the Charter Oak Trail and the future of that, and which is moving right along, by the way. There are some improvements already that have been put in place and that are getting that connection to get closer and closer and closer. What does this mean? It means that from eastern Connecticut, eventually you will have a safe lane of your very own to ride your bicycle into Hartford on without having to deal with the roads at all. Once you either pick it up in Bolton Notch area, or you can pick it up as far south as Willimantic, and actually I should say as far east as Willimantic, you can really kind of stay off the roads and do that. But my rant is more about behavior today. So, you know, I like to look at things in a way of how wonderful they are, and the ways that sometimes people step over the bounds on them. And when I talk about rail trail or bike lane behavior, I'm talking about these wonderful infrastructures that have been put in place, and they've been put in place for us to ride our bike safely. And there are a number of people that use them that are family-oriented. They're riding at a very slow pace, and they are riding out there with their kids, or they're actually using the trail, especially the dirt trail, although I see it on the paved ones too. They're using it for walking and recreation, and it just gives them a really safe environment of which to do that. And, you know, I am, and Fran is a, we are both avid road cyclists. We spend a lot of time on the road. And when you do spend a lot of time on the road, you basically, as you ride more, you get a little faster and you get a little more confident on your bike. And so you tend to ride at maybe a higher rate of speed as your fitness increases. And that's great. I mean, it's an awesome thing. And, you know, good for those of you out there that are trained road cyclists and that are, you know, obeying all the rules of the road and still out there recreating on your bicycles or even commuting on your bicycles and being on the road. Great thing. But if you're going to take that to a bike lane, turn it down a little bit. Okay, this is a big deal. You have other people out there that are just beginning. You have people out there that are not at your skill level, and they are being really tormented by you when you go screaming by them at blinding speed. Not to mention the fact that what if one of those little kids on that little tiny bicycle were to swerve, and they do, by the way, they are not as well trained as you are. They have not spent the years and years and miles of cycling on their bicycle as you have. So they're still in that learning curve. All they have to do is cross over in front of your path when you're coming through at a speed which is far beyond the limit of the bike lane or the rail trail, and you're all going to go down in a big pile. And that's going to be a big problem because you're a much larger mass than they are. You're a mass that's moving at a much higher speed than they are. You're going to do damage. You're going to hurt someone and possibly hurt yourself too at the same time. So this comes to mind because we were out riding on the rail trail a few weeks back. We did this really nice ride from our friend's house, and we were riding along. It was a busy day. It was a beautiful day out. Everyone was riding on the trail. We were on the dirt trail. We were on the airline trail, and we were just riding along, having a great day. And of course, you know, we come up upon the people that have their kids out and or the walkers, and you know, we respect them, and therefore we will slow down when we get to them. And the other thing is, I've come to really finding it important to announce yourself before you get there, and it's a couple of ways of doing that. You can use it, you can shout out to them and say, hey, cyclist coming from the back or coming up on you on your left, on your right. They do that a lot in skiing where, you know, you're going down a mountain and you're coming up on another skier and you mention you're on the right or the left so that they know not to turn into you when they're making their turns going down the hill. It's the same situation. It's just a courtesy is what it is. And it's also safer when you do that sort of thing. So you can announce yourself that way. Another way you can do it, and I just put a little bell on my bike. And you can put a bell on your bike, you put a horn on your bike. So, you know, the simple little ding-dong bells work really good. There's a number of different bells out there that you can purchase and put on your bicycle. And they're cool. They make enough noise so that they let people know who's coming up behind them or that there is someone coming up behind them. Again, blinding speed when you go by them, probably not a good idea. Slow it down a little bit. Pass them slowly. My favorite thing to do, and Fran knows this, is when I get to the little kids, I see little kids on bikes, and I just beam. I think it's great. Kids on bikes, great thing. And I'll even pat them on the top of their helmet when I go by. And if you want to win a little kid's heart when they're riding their bike, don't be a snob. But tell them what a wonderful bicycle they have. It doesn't matter what brand it is. It doesn't matter what level it is. It matters that they're on the bike. So be that ambassador and tell them, hey, nice bike. Oh, wow, it's pink. That's a really cool color. You know, do what you need to do to let them know that you're appreciating them being out there. You tell a little kid that they have a nice bike and that you really love the way it looks or you like the streamers that are hanging off the handlebars, that you have a friend for life. They're going to love you for it. They're going to feel an appreciation. They're going to feel an importance. And that's a really, really good thing. So, you know, make sure you do that. Now, if you're going in the opposite direction of the crowd that is going the other way, okay, so you're going north, they're going south, let's say, and you are in that same situation where you're riding along your bike and you're a fairly accomplished cyclist, so you're moving along at a pretty good pace and you see people coming up that you're approaching, will you please, here's the rant, will you please slow down? Just slow down. When you come up to them, slow down. Say hi to them if you need to. You don't have to come to a complete stop, but you know what? It's not a race. you're just out riding your bicycle, and you're riding it in a place where you are really causing an awful lot of trouble if you're out there to get the best time you can on your bike. You have to respect other space on the rail trails because it's important. When we were out that few weeks ago and riding, we had a group that came by us in the opposite direction, and they were on a mission. And people that ride the trails all the time, they know who they are. They know who it is that does this sort of activity. And quite honestly, they came extremely close to us when we were going the opposite way. Now, we're accomplished cyclists, so we're riding a real straight line. But if we were not, there could have been a big problem for both parties involved. So please, please, please slow it down on the rail trails. There's no need to be trying to do a time trial or any kind of a race or any kind of a, here's my favorite one, a Strava segment on a rail trail. If you're doing Strava segments on the rail trail, shame on you. I'm going to put it out there. If you want to call me on this, please do. If you want to email me on this at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, please do. I will take you on this one. You're being horribly irresponsible. And I'd really like you to start paying attention to why those trails were put there and the proper usage of them. So that's my big rant. I just find that bad behavior in any way when you're on a bicycle is really not a good thing. And I'm not a big proponent of it. So, there's good ways of doing things and not so good ways of doing things. And that would be a good one to pay attention to. Remember, everywhere you go on your bicycle, and I say this over and over and over, you are an ambassador to the sport that you love. Remember that. And if the ambassadorship is to tell everybody that people who ride bicycles are really good and they're really thoughtful, then that's a good thing. If your ambassadorship is that you want to prove a point that you're all that and that you don't care about anybody else, and it is your prerogative to do that, it truly is, but you're not helping any of the rest of us out. So let's play as a team here, please. That would be really, really helpful. That's an important thing to look at. I usually end my show with this, but I'm gonna throw this in here now. I was hoping to get a little bit of information back on this, but I did not. But there is a dinner coming up on November 11th. That's this Friday, and it's for Bike Walk Connecticut. It's their annual dinner and their silent auction on November 11th, 2016. It is at Central Connecticut State University, and it is, if you want more information about it, you can look at www.bikewalkct.org. Go to their website. You can sign up for it there if you haven't done that yet. That's always a nice thing to do. You're going to meet lots of people who are really bicycle friendly, a very strong group of advocates that attend this particular dinner. I don't have anything listed here as far as a speaker. Sometimes there's a guest speaker there, but I don't see anything listed on their website. So if anyone out there is listening from Connecticut Bike Walk, you can please give us a call at 860-486-9487, and we can add any more information to this as you would want us to. So anyway, please call us if you are from bikewalkconnecticut.org or the Bicycle Walk Connecticut, basically. Give us a ring. Let us know what's going on with that annual dinner. And again, you can get the information on their website. I'm going to say it again, www.bikewalkconnecticut.org. And, it's kind of a fun thing. There is one other thing that it's associated with it, and that is that they also have a silent auction, and there are a number of people who have donated things to their organization and to this dinner, and that are you know, and you can bid on these things. It is a silent auction. If you've ever done those before, they're pretty basic. You just put in your bid of what you'd like to pay for that item, and you can do that. And so it's all completely up to you. You do not have to participate if you don't want to, but everything you participate with is going to help the organization. And that organization is critical to helping us with bicycle policy here in Connecticut. We have a 3-foot law here because of that. We have a revised 3-foot law that also gives a cyclist rights to ride as far to the right as safely possible, as is determined by the cyclist, not by the driver of a motor vehicle. So they're looking out for you. So support them. They're a really, really nice organization. They're just great people. They like to do what you like to do. They like to ride their bikes. And that's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, you know, give them a look-see. Check them out. There are advocacy for the state of Connecticut at Bike Walk Connecticut. They're a good group. And hopefully we'll see you there, or I'll see you there. I know I'm going. I don't think Fran has signed up for it, but that's, you know, she's probably going to be working, which is why I didn't sign her up. But I will be there. So if you'd like to meet Pedlin' Ron, you will see Pedlin' Ron there. And I will let you try to figure out which one I am in the room. You can, it's which one is Pedlin' Ron. Those of you know me, that's, we won't have to play that game. But if you don't know me and you want to get to know me a little bit more and you want to talk more about bicycle advocacy or anything else that you feel is really pertinent to the show, or if you want to be a guest on the show, I would love to have you here, because I just want to keep the all things bike word going. So let's look into the possibility of going to the annual dinner at Bike Walk Connecticut this Friday, November 11th. And I believe the doors open at 5:30 p.m. on that. And that is at Central Connecticut State University Constitution Room Memorial Hall at 1615 Stanley Street, New Britain, Connecticut, if you're looking to go there. Again, you can check it out online. So anyway, it's a great organization. I try to plug them as much as I can, because I really think that they're doing some good things for us, and we need more good things for us, for those of us who are on bicycles. Let's see. How do we tie this into elections and cycling? Interesting, huh? Well, this is a big deal because, you know, elections and cycling, well, as we look at this and we talk about it a little bit more, you're going to understand that laws don't get passed unless there's legislation that is put through, and you have to put a bill through, and it has to be voted on, and you have to, first of all, you have to get the attention of your local politicians, and you have to work your way up, and it's got to go into Hartford, and they have to talk about it, and they have to present it on a bill, and then they have to talk about it. We're going way, way back to early times in school when they taught you all this, and if you don't remember how it all works, I'm not going to be the one to refresh you on that one. You can figure that one out on your own. But, you know, get to know your local representatives. Get to know the people that live in your community, that make decisions on what happens in your community. And, you know, we have a local person here who I do believe won his election yesterday, and he is representative of our part of town and the area here. And, I'm going to shout out to Greg Haddad, because Greg Haddad is a good guy, and he does a lot of really positive things. And the thing I like about Greg, and this is how Greg won me over, you know, politicians, well, you know, they're politicians. They can have their ways of doing things, and they can have good behavior, and they can have bad behavior, and they can do a really great job. And of course, you know, we see ones that don't do such a great job. But Greg Haddad won me over the day he knocked on my door. And I opened the door, and he had a bicycle helmet on his head, and he was canvassing door to door on his bicycle. So big, big shout out to Greg Haddad out here in Mansfield. What a brilliant move. If he didn't plan that and he just happened into my driveway and up to my house with a bicycle and a helmet on his head, then that was a really fortunate thing that he did, but maybe he had it in the back of his mind, I'm going to stop by Ron Menezes' house, and I am going to knock on his door, but I'm going to do it on my bicycle and see if I can't win him over. Well, you got me. You got me right there. You had me at the door knock with the helmet on your head. It was a beautiful thing. So why do I like to have a good relationship with my local local representative? I'll tell you why. Because when I see something going on, and Fran does this too with naturopathic medicine, when we see things going on that we feel we need changed, we talk to them. And we say, hey, you know what we need? This is what we need for our organization. And I never approach it with what I need for me, because I'm not an I need for me kind of guy. I'm the kind of guy who really is looking out, again, as the ambassador of cycling. I am looking out for everyone who is pedaling two wheels down the road. I want whatever it is that I'm looking for to help all of us. And so I contact my local representative and I say, hey, Greg, I would like to see this. What do you think? How can we present this? I don't know how to do it because this is a job that you do and you know how to get in and out of there. So how can you help me get this onto a bill and get the bill passed? And talk and get to know your legislators. You know, take them for a bike ride. Take them out to a rail trail. If they are a legislator that is not looking at their, like they're overly physically bicycle friendly, then, you know, just take them to the rail trail and go for a mile ride with them. Bring them back onto a bike. We all started out on bikes. Many of us started out on bikes. I can't make the generalization that we all did, but there are a large number of us that have spent our early years on bicycles. And when you put someone on a bicycle who has not been on a bicycle for 20 or 30 years, and you take them out for a one-mile ride, you see it happen all over again. You see that big beaming smile on their face. You see that kid in me come out in them, and all of a sudden they're happy and they're free and they're on the machine that they power, and they are powerful on that machine. It's just a great thing. So get to know your legislator. This is really important. And you know, so find those people, make friends with them, make a statement, let them know that you vote for them. That's an important thing. They need your vote. Let them know that you vote for them. Let them know that you are a person that can help them continue doing the good work that they do. And you can give them some suggestions, which will be very positive for the community, which will increase their real estate in their market as far as what they do. So it's a good thing. Bicycles and politics. Where else can we go here, Fran? Do you have anything to add on to this as far as bicycles and politics go?
Bicycles and politics. I don't know. But I have something interesting to add. I don't know if it's necessarily about bicycles, but I just want to say that, you know, I'm half Canadian. I mean, I'm fully Canadian and I'm also fully American. I'm both.
Right. Well, right? You lived up there for 4 years, right?
Yeah, just about. Not quite, but yeah. Close enough. I got my citizenship, so I'm a dual citizen. Anyway, and I'm very proud to be Canadian as well as American, because I think Canada is a wonderful country and it has wonderful people and it has wonderful policies. And I really like Canada's politics because they basically have four major political parties. And when you vote for the prime minister, they don't have a president, they're prime minister. When you vote for the prime minister, you don't vote for the person, you vote for the party. So it's not a cult of personality in the same way as it is down here. So meanwhile, I'm still connected to many of my Canadian friends on Facebook. So, and I chat with them regularly because they're on Facebook. And there's a lot of them and lovely people. I've got people that I'm chatting with. So I lived in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, and so the people that I talked to, I knew when I was in Newfoundland, and some of them have since left. Like I have the pair of sisters, one is in Florida and one is in Ontario now. They left Newfoundland, unfortunately. And then I have a couple that are in Newfoundland, and I'm still talking to them regularly. Anyway, so I've been chatting with them, and they have been commenting on the election. And
I'm sure.
And they're speaking like they're saying the same things that Americans are. None of them are happy. It's interesting. All the Canadians who are speaking, they're saying that they can't believe this is happening. You know how people are saying, "Oh, I can't believe it. I woke up. It's a nightmare. It's an alternate reality." All the grieving things that people are saying. They're saying the exact same things as though it's happened to them, because they feel like it has. And so one of my friends, my Canadian friend, said that the feeling outside of the U.S. is that this is very frightening, that they just really feel like this is going to destabilize the world. That's how this is being seen outside of the U.S. And we're not hearing that side of it because, you know, if you're listening to the mainstream media, the mainstream media is they're trying to present a calm face right now. Alternative media is going to be presenting more of a, alternative media is going to be presenting more of a matter of fact face right now and just be optimistic about the future. But in other countries, they're not pulling any punches.
Yeah,
and they're not happy.
So if you have a friend in another country who you can communicate with, it's a great time to communicate with them, because it would be kind of a cool thing to kind of see their perspective on it. And if they happen to be that person who is riding a bicycle, you also get to call them up and ask them how their bike riding's going. And so, you know, you can put it in that direction too, which is kind of cool. So I would strongly encourage getting a little bit more of a worldview on things. Our media here in the United States is not always very directed towards what we like to hear and see.
Let me read to you.
What do you got over there, friend?
Yeah. Here's one of my Canadian friends. She says, the incredulity and horror seem to be almost unanimous. So this is the word she's using. This is a Canadian woman. So she did not vote for Trump. She doesn't have friends who voted for Trump. She's sitting in Ontario, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what she's saying. The incredulity and horror seem to be almost universal outside of the U.S. from what I'm seeing in the news and social media anyway. It is a real matter of importance in Canada. Not sure what will happen in the U.S. international relations with Trump in office. The rest of the world seems to be holding its collective breath. She then says the rest of the world, that there are people who fear for their futures, their children, and the fate of the world. Because that's one of the things I'm hearing on social media. Women who are waking up and saying, I don't know how to tell my children that this person is now our president and that he's this kind of role model for the world, and I don't know how to make my children safe. That's what people are actually saying. So she responds with, the rest of the world does too. I have to believe that he will moderate his words and actions now that he's won. He will be powerful, but he'll have to have his changes approved by hopefully more level heads. As others have said, he is still just one man.
That's correct. And we have to look at that.
She has a point there.
Again, I'm going to go back to local politics on this and get to know your local legislator and get to know, you know, what their views are and talk to them. Be part of the action, not the inaction. It's kind of a political thing, I understand, but it's important. It's important that everyone is involved and in every way. Now, if we take a look at, you know, other parts of the world, especially I'm going to point towards Europe, because Europe has a unique situation. And the unique situation that Europe has is that they are an area that is built on very little land. They're not as big as we are. They have their cities have very narrow streets, and they have a lot of traffic that goes through those streets. And in addition to that massive amount of traffic that goes through, they're just not really set up for cars the same way as we are here in the United States. In the United States, we make things bigger, wider, better, faster. That's kind of our direction. And it is causing us some issues, and it's something that is being looked at by those of us in the know in bicycle advocacy and bicycle commuting, and we're starting to get some action in that direction. But Europe is, if you ride a bike across a city in Europe, even a small city in Europe, it's way faster than driving your car, because the cars just can't go that fast. They can't fit on the streets that well. And so the people have learned that not only is it a faster way to get themselves across town to transport themselves, but it also is a way that doesn't cost them as much money. And, you know, again, this is a great way of controlling your finances. This is a great way of keeping your budget in check. And ride your bike. If you're going to ride, if you know, if you're going to go to work or you're going to go down to the market and back, ride your bicycle. The people in Europe are, they're very, very different and have a very different attitude than we have here about bicycles. And again, this is something that we can work into our politics. So bicycle and politics. Let's talk about it more. Bicycle and politics are a good thing. Get involved. Get involved in your local community. If you see something going on in your local community, let's say you ride your bike through a particular town for, you know, and you do it. Let's say you do it every day. Let's say you're a daily commuter. Okay, you have a 2 mile ride to work from where you live. Okay, I'm gonna give you that really luxury of only being 2 miles away from work. And no, this is not pointed at you, Fran. Anyway, let's say you're that close and you have chosen to leave the keys to your car hanging on the hook at home and to ride your bicycle back and forth to work every day. And you're doing it because you feel better about what you're doing for the environment. You're doing it because you're in a situation where, gee, I rode my bike 2 miles across town to get from my house to work. And by the time I got into my car and drove my car and then parked my car and then got out of my car and walked from the parking lot to the front door of my work, I only got there a minute and a half faster than I would have if I rode my bike. So, you know, you got to look at these things. It's worth it. It's worth it. Take a good look. Look at your situation. And I know that there's a lot of people with situations where, you know, they live far, a much greater distance from work than others do. So, you know, it's not going to be working as well for them. But it is... you know, you can modify that too. You can drive in to a certain point and you can park your car. There are commuter parking lots all around major cities where a lot of people work. And you can park your car there and then ride your bike from there. And now you're avoiding that. Okay, now I'm really close to work, but now I've gotten to the point where everyone is coming into this one central place to go to work, and the traffic has increased dramatically, and I'm in bumper to bumper traffic. And you know, let's say, you know, there's an exit ramp off of a major highway, and the traffic is backed up so far that it's actually backed up onto the highway, and now you're out there as a sitting duck waiting for someone to run into the back of you because you're stopped trying to make a turn into an exit. And you're placing yourself in a very dangerous position. And I know those of you who commute with cars and trucks are very familiar with the situation. So what if you had parked your car a few miles away instead and it stopped getting into the traffic situation and then pulled your bike out of the back of your car or off the back of your car, off the top of your car, and just hopped on and ridden your bike in the rest of the way? You're going to avoid the backup. You're going to avoid the parking garage fees, because yes, there are parking garage fees too when you get into situations like that. You're not paying for that. You're going to avoid the whole problem with getting caught in all of that traffic because you're on your bicycle and you've got a little bit more room to the side. You can get around cars if you need to. I am, of course, not an advocate of weaving in and out of cars. I am not an advocate of blowing through restricted areas like stop signs, stop lights. I think you still need to obey the rules. But you do have an advantage when you're on a bicycle versus being in a car, an extreme advantage. So use it. What a great idea. So bicycles and politics, you need to make things better. So as you're, to back this up to where I was going to segue to, if you are doing this and you're riding in and you go by a dangerous intersection, but it's the only way you can get from point A to point B. So there's no real way around it and you have to deal with it. But you identify it as a possible danger, you need to tell people about it, because people won't know, those in the know won't know until it becomes an accident. And when it becomes an accident, then it's recordable. And when it becomes recordable, and it could turn into not a good situation for either the cyclist or for the driver, the person who's driving the car or truck. So the person on the bicycle and the person driving the car or truck may both have some major problems with that particular intersection. And a lot of it has to do with, and I'll point this out, traffic engineering. If you are a traffic engineer and you're out there listening, talk to me. I want to hear about this. I want to hear about the pros and cons of what we're doing when we're putting a bike lane or a pedestrian way into a large intersection. I want to know what your restrictions are. I want to know what it is that makes you hesitate to do something like this or even suggest something like this. And I just really want to hear it from the other side. And I want to do a pro and con on this so that we can lay this out. Because I see so many of these intersections put in, and they are so incredibly bicycle and pedestrian unfriendly that you're looking at an accident waiting to happen. And you would think, okay, shout out to the insurance industry. You would think that they might get involved in something like this because they don't want to have to pay for accidents. That's not their business. Their business is to insure you, and their business is not to have to constantly be paying for injuries or damage or lawsuits. That's not really what they want to do. So why not make it safer for all of us by engineering the improper intersection correctly and putting the bike lanes in, okay, and making it less expensive and less liability for everyone involved? This is a great idea. And again, this is political, okay, because you're going to go, and I have had this experience recently, you're going to go to your town engineer and you're going to say, hey, see this intersection over here? You know, I was riding my bike there the other day, and, you know, I had a little problem with a person driving a car or a person driving a truck. And, you know, I understand where they're coming from because, you know, the lane really isn't designed correctly to make it safe for me to be there or as safe for me to be there. And it doesn't give them enough room to get around me if I'm, let's say, making a left-hand turn. Is there anything we can do to make this better? And I have found in the many years that I have become politically active within my communities, and I'm not saying politically active just in, you know, vote for me, vote for you. I'm talking about, you know, political actions like getting certain things changed as far as policies go for, well, bike lanes, pedestrian lanes. That's my big thing because I am the self-proclaimed ambassador of cycling, so I'm always going to be going in that direction. But if you want to get things done, you have to go there with, and, you know, take notes on this one, okay? This is extremely important. You need to go there with a solution, not just the problem. If you go there with just the problem, you are going to be pushed to the side. All right, you are going to be looked at as, oh, one of those people. And because they're dealing with them all the time, they deal with a lot of people within our communities. They are public servants, and they are, you know, they're making policy for us, and they're, you know, they're out there trying to solve our problems, but they're hearing everyone's problems all the time. What you need to do is you need them to hear everyone's solutions all of the time. If you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. I say it over and over and over. It's another one of Ron's rants, but it is definitely something that you need to pay attention to. So when you see and identify a particular intersection in the road that needs attention, you need to go to whoever is involved with it, and it may be on a local level, it may be your local town, it may be on the state level, it may be a public highway, a state highway, Usually that's indicated by a number on the road versus a name on the road. Now, numbered roads can have names too, but most of the, all the state roads will have actually a number on them. And in which case, you don't go there with just the problem. You do identify the problem, but you want to also identify a possible solution. And no, you're not a traffic engineer. That is not your training. Or maybe you are. Maybe you look at this and go, wait a second, from my professional expertise, I see this as a solution issue. And that's what you have to look at everything as. Never look at it as a problem issue. Look at it as a solution issue. Offer a solution. My best response to offering solutions to political problems has been to go there with more than one solution. Give them a few different ways of looking at the situation and give them options that might work better or not better for them. Give them your A option, your best option, and then give them your B option, which is, you know, something that you would live with, but you would not necessarily like to see as much as you would like to see the A option. So this is what you need to pay attention to. Solution solving, not problem solving. That's the way I like to look at it. So here you are presenting them with a solution. There's a really interesting situation in a local town where there's a rail trail that comes through town. And the rail trail is it's exciting. It's a beautiful trail. It's got, it becomes the dirt trail, but it's paved when it goes through the town. And there's a section of it that's missing. And it's missing because there's a Main Street environment involved. And that Main Street environment is busy. It has a lot of cars on it. It's a state highway. And that is, you know, somewhat problematic because, okay, how do we connect the dots? Well, there are back roads of which you could connect the dots on. There is one that runs parallel, or there are actually two of them that run parallel to that main street. And one of them is way busy. There's a lot of car traffic on it, lots of stop signs, lots of car traffic, sidewalks on both sides of the street. So there is room for pedestrians there, which is very nice. And then the other one is not as busy, but there are no sidewalks on it. There are no pedestrian lanes in any way on it, and it is a one-way street on one end. So half of the trail, half of that connecting piece, and we're talking about 6/10 of a mile, is actually one way. Now, trying to put a multi-purpose lane for pedestrians and for bicycles on a one-way street is asking for trouble. And so I have had conversations with this town about a possibility of change. Why not? Why not look at the change? And before I presented this, before I actually went to them and said, don't do this, you know, this is not going to work, I didn't go there with the idea that, you know, you're going to have to figure out the answer to the problem. I went there with a solution. And I showed them the solution. And I have more than one solution. I have the oh boy, if Ron was king solution, which obviously is going to be difficult for me to get through, or I have the let's work together solution. The let's work together solution usually is the better answer. The Ron is king solution in a perfect world is a great thing, but it doesn't always work, and it becomes a little too self-serving for them and my community of cyclists, which I am really more interested in helping than anything else. So you have to look at how we all work together. So the less self-serving solution, or the one that would work better as all of us playing as a team and keeping cyclists off of this main road, which is a busy road. It goes through a downtown area. It goes on a main street, which is a state highway. And it goes by a lot of commercial establishments. And those commercial establishments are mainly cafes and small shops. But there's also some restaurants there, some larger restaurants there. There's even a theater for the arts there. There's some really cool stuff that goes on in that particular downtown area. And it's an opportunity. And this is a really strong word. And a word that if you are making a presentation when you have an idea that is going to help all of us out there in the world, remember the word opportunity and how strong and powerful a word it is, because when you present it as an opportunity, it comes out as a very positive message, because you're giving them an opportunity to make a decision that will make everyone happy and make things work better. So my suggestion to this town was that the opportunity that was involved was to increase the commerce on their main street section of road, which was only 0.6 miles, and they would be able to get revenue from that because there would be more people that would be visiting those particular businesses, and as those businesses started to grow and thrive, more businesses would want to move there because of the opportunity. Anyone in real estate, you know what I'm talking about when I talk about opportunity and location, location, location. That's what it's all about. So what happens if you take a small town environment, a small city environment, and you take the traffic that is on it and you mix it with bicycle and pedestrian? Well, if you have sidewalks on both sides of the road, the pedestrian problem is solved immediately. This particular situation, there are sidewalks on both sides of the road. So there's no real problem with pedestrian traffic on this particular section or 0.6 miles of road. But there is no lane for the bicycles. Okay, now I'm going to give you the Ron's perfect world. And the Ron's perfect world is when you start talking to Rails to Trails people and people that are really involved in this, and they tell you, well, what you need to do is you need to take the parallel parking away on one side of the street, and you need to keep it on the other side of the street. That's fine, because we don't like car doors as cyclists, you see, because car doors can open into us and then they can cause a problem. And if you take away the parallel parking on one side of the road, you take away the possibility of a car door opening into you. But what you gain from that is you gain a lane, okay? And that lane is wide enough to accommodate bicycle traffic in both directions. So what you have is a north-south or an east-west situation that you've applied to this side of the road. Yes, you've taken away some parallel parking. What does that do to your commerce? Well, it may affect your commerce initially, because you're not going to find people that are going to be able to pull up right in front of your business on your side of the road and then get out and do what they have to do. So you're going to have to adjust your brain on that one, because what you're going to gain from it is you're going to gain a lot more people that are using bicycles for transportation. Another factor that goes into this, and something that's really important to consider, is that most of these trails, these multi-use bicycle/pedestrian trails, are most heavily used on the weekends, not during the weekdays. So because they are used during the weekends more than the weekdays, you're going to find that your people driving cars and trucks traffic is less on the weekends than it is in the weekday, because you don't have delivery trucks going up and down the street. You don't have as many commercial vehicles on your street, which are where the concerns are. And I can see that. It is a concern. Do we want to mix a tractor trailer truck with a family of cyclists going down the street? Probably not. It's not a great idea, but it can be done. And the other thing to look at is, if you do add this to your downtown retail environment, what you're going to get is you're going to get a slowdown of traffic, because people are going to see bicycles more. There's going to be more of a visual out there, more pedestrians, more bicycles, and they are going to slow down. We have a situation up here in Storrs where they built a downtown environment right on Route 195, which is a state highway. And it's a very busy state highway because it goes right through our University of Connecticut campus. A bike lane was not put in there. I have to save that rant for another day because it'll get lengthy. But there is no bike lane. There is parallel parking that goes along with the rant. We'll try to work our way beyond that, because what I'm trying to get at here is, because they built this narrower section of road. They narrowed it by putting a median divider in. They also slow it down by putting multiple crosswalks that are textured, so you know you feel them when you drive your car or your truck over it, so you know it's there. But what it really does is, and this is a traffic trick. This is a trick in engineering. If you narrow the road gets slower. So the idea behind it was to slow traffic down. And I think that has done a pretty good job, actually. I find it very difficult to use that section of highway without slowing down. And I should be slowing down. It goes through a downtown area, and it goes through a college campus. And there's a lot of pedestrian traffic on that section of road. So it gives me a visual that slows things down. And when it slows things down, a couple of different things happen. Number one, your road gets safer. And number two, those people that are driving in cars and in trucks can see what's on the side of the road. So if you're a commercial environment, when they're driving by your commercial establishment, they see that, oh, look, there's a cafe there. Oh, look, there's a bookstore there. Oh, look, there's something else over here, something else over there. It doesn't matter what it is, but they see it because they have to slow down. And this is created by bicycles. Okay, you see where I'm going here? Now, the perfect world is you close down that one side of parallel parking, and then you have a north-south lane just going back and forth, and you have an adequate street crossing where you cross over from, you know, one part of the trail to the other part of the trail. The not so invasive way of dealing with this, and this is also a simple thing. So now I'm not taking away your parallel parking, but what I am looking at is instead we're simply going to use a method of identification to bicycles, and we are going to identify the areas that they need to be able to make their area safe, and we apply it to the pavement. And all I'm talking about here is paint, just paint, and that's it. Am I boring you over there?
No, I just saw an interesting post. There's two posts that have come up.
I didn't know if that was a sigh or a yawn.
It was a sigh.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I'll accept the sigh. The yawn would make me upset.
So there's two interesting posts, and it's from people in one is from my cousin who lives in New York, and one is from someone who I'm friends with here.
Is it bicycle related, or can I just finish my point here?
You can finish your
point. Let me finish my point, and then we'll go to it. Right. Okay, so here it is. A little bit of paint, okay? You put down these things that any of us who ride bicycles are very, very well aware of. They're called sheros. A shero is an aeroed system with a bicycle figurine within that system. It's paint on the ground. It's very prominent. It's very well known. It's international. It is an identification means of showing you that there are bicycles that also use this particular route of transportation. So it's a share the road method. They are called sheros. They are best applied right in the middle of the lane going down the road. If you're in this downtown situation and you have people coming through, if they're someone who, you know, actually is a fairly accomplished commuter or cyclist, they're going to be going through at probably about the same speed that you would have posted on your signage as you're bringing people through your downtown environment. And if you're designing a downtown environment, why would you design it with extra speed? Why wouldn't you design it with lower speed so that people can identify the commerce that is on the sides of your roads and your lanes? So you put sheros down on both sides of the road. That identifies that there's bicycle traffic going both north or south or east or west, depending on your road that you're dealing with. And when you get to a critical point where, let's say, a cyclist has to make a left-hand turn to stay onto the route, you do these things called box outs. And the box outs are simply, again, paint. I'm not talking about anything else, just paint. This is not a huge expenditure. This is not you know, building something. It's simply putting paint on the road and identifying a situation. The box outs give a safety zone for the cyclists to use so they can get safely across the road when they get to the intersection where they want to make the turn. It's just visual. It works great. It's been proven. You know, anyone who knows traffic engineering and knows alternative traffic engineering and cars and trucks and bicycles, they know how this all works. It's very successful and it makes things safer. And you just put box outs at your key intersections where you know turns are going to be made by the people on bicycles. So that's just a way that you can get politically active. You make the presentation to your local government. And if you can't get any further with the local government because they won't identify it, then you go to the next level and keep working your way up the chain until you get someone's attention. So that's how we get political with bicycles. And anyway, we have a few minutes left. Fran seems to have cued in on something over there, and I think she wants to talk to us about it. So, Fran, what you got?
Well, there's a little thread going on that I've seen from two different posters, and it's a picture of a map of America, and it's got the Louisiana Purchase outlined on it. And, you know, the Louisiana Purchase is basically the states in the middle, right? It's like the middle third of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And one post says, buyer's remorse. And the other post says, yo, France, you guys want this back? We don't need it anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Boy, politics. It was a tough day yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I have a suggestion here. Very, very simple, and then we're going to have to cue off here. But I have a suggestion here, and that is that if you're feeling a lot of anxiety about the results that you saw yesterday, and it's really, you know, it's got you a little down and a little blue, why don't you go out and ride your bike? You'll feel a lot better when you get done. Get out there and enjoy a little fresh air and feel a little better about, you know, yourself, and give yourself back that little piece of independence that you get when you ride your bike, and go out and enjoy yourself. So anyway, last shout out, because it's over with after this Friday. Remember, this weekend, coming up, actually Friday, November 11th, 2016, there is the Bike Walk Connecticut Annual Dinner and Silent Auction I talked about with a little more information earlier. You can find out more about it at www.bikewalkct.org, and come down and check it out. Meet Pedal and Run. I'll be there. It's kind of a cool thing. I go every year. It's a fun thing. So you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you would like to reach me, you can reach me by sending me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut.